Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Autism Stories. I'm your host, Doug Bletcher, the founder of Autism Personal Coach. Autistic people are the true experts of the autistic experience, and Autism Stories is where we interview autistic people to learn from their stories, experiences, and get their insights. If you would like to be notified about each week's episode of Autism Stories, we suggest you subscribe on your favorite podcast listening platform. We would also appreciate it if you could give us a positive rating and review, as it will help others to learn about autism stories. On today's episode, Laura Helfield joins us to discuss sleep differences in autistic people, being an independent nurse, and creating safe spaces. We hope you enjoy today's conversation. Laura, thanks so much for joining me here on Autism Stories.
Thank you so much for asking me to come on.
Absolutely. And I'd love to start out by learning, where does your story in the autistic community begin?
Oh, gosh. Technically, decades ago, with schooling and residencies and mental health and disability centers. But at the timing, I was learning everything around autism and disability from the medical model. And so I didn't recognize myself at all in lectures and discussions with professors. However, I found I felt really connected to the people in the centers and clinics. And I ended up just always gravitating to extra residencies or like extra volunteer programs out of the queer spaces and also the disabled spaces. I always felt just really comfortable there, but at the same time kept thinking of myself as not part of the group, which I find so fascinating now. So it took years later, my oldest kid, we started going through the autism assessment with him, and I just started finding other really lovely autistic people online and watching conversations and going, oh, it sounds just like me. Or when other professionals would be discussing my kid with me, I'd be thinking, well, I do that too. Okay, well, I didn't really notice that as a problem because that's how I do that. And so I ended up realizing it then in my early 30s. And I did end up going through a formal diagnosis a couple years later, not because I think you have to. I put myself down for it and waited for it and thought, I just kind of was curious. I think typical maybe to our neurotype, I was curious to go through of like what it was like. And I wanted to learn and kind of have all the feelings of going through that system of how, what I wanted to take away from it and what I wanted to help change.
You're an independent nurse and a sleep consultant. So in thinking about that, I was wondering why you went the route in nursing to be an independent nurse and how that's helped to improve maybe the overall quality of your life.
Oh, it's made all the difference in the world. I love being a nurse. I switched into it in grad school. I feel like it's an extension of who I am. I've always been involved in public outreach. I've always been involved in community service programs. And so my background's in the sciences and biology. And then I went on for nursing in grad school back in Los Angeles. And then when I was there as well, I was really fortunate and had access to do the program for public health, which involves understanding the community and therefore figuring out like what supports as a whole is needed. And I also did a program for program development. And then I moved to the UK about a decade ago. And working here has been a very different ballgame. My credentials don't fit into the NHS, and I was trying to mold myself into like council-based programs too. And I learned a lot. I met some really lovely people. There were some great steps forward, but I couldn't really deliver the support in the way that I knew to be true and what was needed, especially once I understood myself and why I had struggled to eat, why I had struggled to sleep, and the same with my kids. So I said, I think I'm just gonna go for it and try. And so I decided to do that with a tiptoe in. And I thought, well, we'll see if anyone's interested in listening. And it's been so much fun. I get to meet incredible people all around the world, just like we were laughing about when I said good afternoon to you, and it's not, it's morning. I have the excuse to reach out to people that are doing really incredible work, really interesting programs, hear about it, and figure out if I can include that now in my support as well. So I just feel like it's made me such a better support myself, I'm able to take care of myself better, and I just feel like I'm more confident with my kids as well. So it's changed everything for me.
One of the things I love learning about is hearing about the autistic experience in different cultures, in different countries. I've only lived in the United States my whole life. So just living in the United States and now the UK now for the last decade, have you noticed differences in your experiences as an autistic person?
It's a really good question. So I knew I was different, but I didn't really know why from childhood. I didn't really understand that it was being autistic until I lived here. So some of that I'm missing, but I would say that there feels to be a big difference because here in the UK, we don't have like the insurance companies and the insurance companies that are backing programs that are more behavior based. So I think there, to me, and it's not complete. But to me, it feels like there's a bit of an ease then that's somewhat easier. It's still not easy of accepting the neurodiversity paradigm versus coming from somewhere before where the programs around the clinics really were so behavior-based because the insurance companies are so entwined, which of course that just changes the lens and the outlook of the professionals themselves, where I feel like here, once people hear it, they often can start forming these new ideas and bringing in the identifying people a little bit easier. Again, not that it's easy over here either, but I feel like there's a difference of that because of not having insurance companies.
You've mentioned the medical model a couple of times, and I look at the medical model as oftentimes not very helpful to us as autistic people. So I'm wondering, thinking about that, what are some things that nurses you think can do to better support their autistic patients?
I think the most important thing to understand as a professional that the mental health issues we can have, like anxiety, is not part of our identity. I feel like that's something I could say over and over and over again, because I think even I probably had that in my head as well, some ableism from what I learned is from the model of, well, you're autistic, so therefore you are anxious. And that's obviously quite dangerous because that means essentially I don't really need to add in supports because inherently you're just an anxious person versus realizing that depression or that anxiety or that burnout is because of all the environmental things going around you. And what we need to do is see how to support you as this autistic person who happens to be experiencing some mental health challenges right now. I would say that's probably the number one thing that I would like for other healthcare workers to understand. And then built from that, then is really just like everyone else that we have some medical conditions we need help with. We have some different ways of sleep, so we might need that adjusted for us, just like we're told to look at every patient as an individual.
And thinking about sleep, as autistic people, trouble sleeping impacts so many of us. So, I've seen you talk about a good amount about on social media about how we eat. So I was wondering how you look at our eating habits and patterns in regards to the impact on our sleep.
Oh, that's an interesting one. Gosh, because it is the self-care tasks, what I call the self-care tasks, like the eating, sleeping, toileting, hygiene, all of it, because it's taking care of ourselves. They are all intertwined. I see them as having this foundation from our mental health, and to where if our nervous systems feel regulated, if we feel well within ourselves, we're more able to accept all that self-care. So then I'm able to accept that I can feel hungry and eat. I can accept that I feel tired and I'm more easily able to sleep, and just all the lovely hormones that help with sleep keep going. The connection with food, I would say, I think I need to ask a follow-up question. I think being autistic, my brain and ADHD, my brain went into all these tangents I could see in front of me and was like, would it be in relation to needing to eat late at night and maybe even snacks overnight? I was just doing a chat around burnout and normalizing to parents that because in burnout or when someone is their nervous system's been dysregulated for such a long time, everything gets thrown off, including the circadian rhythm. So it makes sense that someone might need to be eating at times they didn't before and that include overnight in order to keep their blood sugar at a decent level so that way they can sleep, which seems counterintuitive to say, actually, they might be waking a lot because they do need some sugar. You know, they might need a quick yogurt, they might need a quick fruit snacks because they're using up so much sugar in that fight or flight system that actually it's keeping them from sleeping overnight. So giving those late night snacks are great. I think our community needs to be told, like, it's totally okay not to follow the Instagram profiles that are like, don't eat past 6 p.m. Maybe for some people that's fantastic, but for some of us as well, our timing of eating needs to be based off of taking care of ourselves, and that's so individual.
And an aspect of sleep that I think, you know, when people talk about sleep problems, you know, there's not much focus on waking up and starting your day. So you recently asked, I think, an important question on social media in regards to what our sensory needs are to wake up during the day. And I think you got a lot of great responses, but I'd like to know your answer to that question because I didn't see that. So what are your sensory needs in order to wake up during, you know, the beginning of each day?
Oh, totally called out for not adding my own. Probably just, they're so funny. I love that. Yes, I think it's such a common issue for our community members as adults. And then what parents say about their young people is waking up's really hard. And it's so I naturally bring it into the discussions of nighttime because how we start the day impacts the whole rest of the day and that future night, doesn't it? So I find that we as a community tend to talk about that we need a lot of different sensory input to actually fully wake up and to get our thoughts put together in the morning. So quite different than my alarm going off and the expectation that I just start getting dressed right away, go down and can eat right away, and then I'm out the door. Like, that to me sounds miserable. I'm usually up for a couple hours. So yes, it means I wake up quite early, but that block of time for me is where the lights have to change quite slowly. I eventually like a candle for smell as well. I do light stretching and movement because I feel like the hypermobility syndrome. I need to be able to feel where my body is. So getting that proprioception input, vestibular input. I cannot feel hunger until I've moved. So the idea that I would come down and have breakfast used to make me feel really ill and sick. And I've shared in my past quite often that I had issues with food, particularly as a teen. And that was one of the many, many, many layers of trying to eat in this really socially expected way. You get up and you have breakfast and go on to the day. And for me, I would feel quite ill. So being able to move, slowly get music going, slowly just move my body. And it's over a long period of time. But once I do that, I tend to feel like I'm ready for someone to talk to me so I can actually answer questions, so I can actually take care of somebody else. So yes, it's quite a while for me in the morning.
So it sounds like you have a specific kind of a specific routine, how you kind of start your day, and I have something similar. So I'm wondering what happens when you don't have that.
Oh,
well, how does your day change?
Disastrous. The last time I did that, it was my birthday last August. And I said to myself, I'm just going to sleep in, you know, the kids were off on school holiday. It's middle of the week. And I thought, we're just going to sleep in, and had planned to go on a train ride locally to then go to the movies. And the night before, my spouse helped me buy the train tickets and he helped me buy the movie tickets. And what ended up happening the next day is I could not read the clock. I couldn't, like, just could not read it. And I could not get even the information of just like, what do I do to get ready? And I feel like, I think I was just flying around the house being like, do I get dressed? Are they wearing clothes? Like, I just couldn't even put it all together. And we ended up not leaving the house until actually when we should have left on the train. So we missed the train and I broke down. I felt I was so upset with myself about it. And I just started crying. I was like, I can't believe I let that happen when I was trying so hard not to let it happen. And I was just so frustrated with myself. We ended up driving and then had to pay for parking on top of that then in order to make the movie that we already had bought the tickets for. But it was one of those things of like, it's not worth it to me. Ruins the day.
Now, you've co-written a book that will be published soon titled Creating Safe Spaces for Autistic People. What do you want people to know about this book?
Oh gosh, as soon as you started talking about that, I could feel myself slinking away because it feels so funny to talk about it. Thank you for bringing it up. We've laughed about, so I'm writing it with my friend Scott Nielsen of Autistically Scott. And we keep saying, we put out that one post and then we're like, we probably should do more marketing, but we aren't, it just feels funny. It hopefully will be out soon. We're figuring out the tech behind the scenes, but it is done. It was really just out of the idea that we find ourselves in so many different spaces as autistic educators. I do also a lot of work locally that's not seen online because my kids are usually involved in that stuff and helping set up groups. And you can feel when one is going to be more successful than the other based off of the intention of the people and what knowledge they have to be able to set it up. So what we're hoping is that people get a lot of meaningful tips out of it, whether it's for in a school, a lunch club, the library clubs, kind of anywhere, because we can really struggle to get into the group and to stay in the group. That's a big piece of it as well, is to stay in and to have that continued feeling of being really welcomed and wanted. And we really want to make sure if our community members want to take part in a group that they can. And that is a whole thing of part of my bugbear of why it's being written is I go for local funding here for groups like this. And very often I'm told things by these interviewers is, but your people are autistic. They don't want any of these things. Oh, and if you want this funding, you need to make sure everyone shows proof of identity. And you need to, and they list off these things that you go, that's just totally inappropriate. You know, that's just not correct. So it's also part of our way of indirectly answering back those things.
I think a big part of us not accessing community is not because we don't want it, because that's rarely the case. It's just the safety in being out and about in our community and how we're not even thought of a lot of times in these spaces. Yes. Like just, yes. Like I'm not asking to change the entire world. I'm just asking to be considered when planning spaces and planning for communication. I don't think that's too much to ask.
No, and I love that line you just had, that I just want to be considered. That's so true, isn't it? And that feels really almost like such a basic. And I think I'd like to think that a lot of the people running these groups are going to be starting groups, whether identifying or not. If they were to hear even that line, would be like, well, of course we would. It just might not have been on their radar.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that line. I'm going to need you to give it to me.
it's yours.
No, but that way we can quote you in it. Oh, and it's me. I was going to say, too bad it wasn't recorded, but we are recording.
Yeah.
So you can go back and get your line from there. That was absolutely perfect. Yeah. Absolutely perfect. I think you're hitting the nail on the head is we often aren't asking for a lot. It would just be that if I speak up, will I be listened to? Will that idea be considered?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Laura, lastly, how can our listeners learn more about you beyond this interview?
Well, that's kind of you to ask. I'm on Facebook under my name, Laura Helfeld, Neurodivergent Nurse Consulting. Instagram, kind of, but I'm not good at videos. I find it difficult. At Neurodivergent, what am I on there? Laura ND Nurse Consulting. And I recently joined LinkedIn, and that's been fun as well. And then I'm the associate editor of Autistic Revolution, and issue 2 just came out this weekend. So I'm kind of coming down from that this week, I would say.
Well, I really appreciate the chance to get to know you a little bit, Laura. Thanks so much for joining us here on Autism Stories.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks so much to Laura for the conversation. To learn about Laura, please check out the link in the podcast description for this episode. Here at Autism Personal Coach, our clients are the experts, our coaches are the guides. The majority of supports for autistics are not helpful. They try to fix us, not support us. That's why many are confused when we say our clients are the experts, experts of their lived experience. Our clients are the experts for what has worked for them and about the things they need and want in their lives. Our coaches first listen to our clients and then ask thoughtful questions, offer resources, and strategize with our clients so they can get what they need to thrive. Would you want a guide in your life to coach you to help you get the things you desire? If so, then visit autismpersonalcoach.com for more information. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Autism Stories, and if you did, if you could tell a friend, foe, or anyone you know about it so they could have the same enjoyable and educational experience as you when listening to Autism Stories, it would be very much appreciated. Until next time, I'm Doug Bletcher of Autism Personal Coach. Talk to you then.